Welcome to another edition of Stokes and Folks. I'm your host, Spencer Stokes, and today we have a big show, and there's going to be two parts of this show. But today we're with Senator Howard Stevenson, I guess former Senator Howard Stevenson, and in the studio, really the person who made it all work, Julie Stevenson. But
my better half.
How many years in the Utah State Legislature?
26.
20 long years. You kind of paused like you were trying to remember.
Yeah, I was. I just turned 70, so my brain cells are dying.
So 26 years, and one of my favorite stories, and you may or may not want to tell me this now that we're doing this for all of our podcast listeners, one of my favorite stories about you arriving at the state Senate was the education you got from, at that time, it was President Arnold Christensen, about who could come on the floor and who couldn't.
Right.
Yeah, tell the story. About just, there was a list, and whoever was on the list could come in.
In those days, lobbyists who had helped with campaigns were on a list, and the sergeants-at-arms, the security people, were to let them come and go as they wished. And
the good old days.
And the Democrat minority had their list. The Republican majority had their list.
And there were actually Democrats back then, right? I mean,
right.
In the
there
Senate.
Were a lot more.
Right.
A lot more. I think there were about 10 or 12 at the time.
Right.
Okay. Out of 29.
And they both had lists.
They both had lists that the sergeants, the security people, were told if the people are on the list, they can come and go into the lounge and onto the floor at will whenever they want.
Which is, I mean, for those of you who are listening, that is unheard of today. You come to the door, you send a note in to a senator or representative. They can come out and get you, or ask their intern to come out and get you, and then take you back into the lounge, and you wait there until the senator or representative comes and speaks with you. But going on the Senate floor, especially while in session, is a big, big no-no.
Oh, the press also could come onto the floor at any time. During one really heated thing that was going on, a member of the press came over to me while we were conducting business, passing bills on the floor, and wanted to interview me on the floor.
While you were listening to the debate?
While we were listening to the debate. And I gave him a quick answer and said, I can talk to you after the floor. But they were used to doing that all the time. And they had free rein. The House also had a list. They had... Lobbyists could go onto the floor there as well, and so could the press.
How old were you?
I was 42 when I was elected.
Oh, really? So, and Arnie was probably—I don't know how old he would have been. He'd been in the state senate for many, many years at that point. So you were a young whippersnapper.
Yeah,
you were probably one of the younger members of the Senate at the time.
Right, I was one of the younger.
And I remember you telling me that you pushed back a little bit on this.
Well, I not only pushed back inside the legislature, inside the Senate, saying, hey, this can't persist. I wrote about it in my corner and said, this is wrong. I said, a homeless person in Pioneer Park should have just as much access as the most... as the biggest fundraiser for our campaigns. And
Did you get called in?
Yeah, I got called in in a stake president kind of interview, because he had been stake president and he knew how to conduct those interviews. And so he said, and he was brilliant in extrapolating information from people and putting points out there and figuring out what was in the middle just by saying, well, I heard this, and of course it wasn't true. And so the person would say, no, that wasn't true. It was this. And so that's just exactly what
How long was he Senate president?
Like, for 10 years. He was the most brilliant detective that I've ever known personally. I mean, seriously, he could really figure out things. And he also was really good at making sure that the legislature had a good image. There was a senator who stole money from a fundraiser, and he made sure that that was taken care of internally rather than
having the press stain on
press.
It.
Yeah, he just said, we're gonna keep, and that was his reason for calling me into the office, was to say, we don't air our dirty laundry outside the legislature. If you have something to say, say it.
And so he wasn't necessarily attacking your position. He was attacking the fact that you dared write about it in your Taxpayers Association President's Corner.
But I said to him, well, I'm not going to stop talking about it publicly until it ends. And it ended the very next session. So at that time, the press was still had a place on the floor, but that was quickly done away.
But they couldn't come and interrupt you during a debate or talk to you during a debate.
And they didn't even have a place on the floor. If they wanted to monitor the legislature, they had to go up in the gallery, and there's a place for them with a plexiglass screen so that they could still be speaking on the radio if it was a radio. So we accommodated them, but at one point, in several of the leadership offices, and they were the only ones who had offices at that time, the office for senators and representatives was on the floor.
Right. Currently, in the legislative process, every House member and every senator has an office, a private office.
Right.
Some are in the Capitol, some are over in the two office buildings behind the Capitol. But at that time, only leadership had offices.
Right. And we also didn't have any help in our district to cover district services and that kind of thing. And I pushed that we needed some sort of help so that we could have some people who could help us do the work, so that we weren't taking our resources from our families and our time from our families as much as otherwise was required.
What year was your first session?
1993. Right. And that was Mike Leavitt's first
year
as governor.
We both
ran on the same campaign, having served on the Education Strategic Planning Commission. And we were together as lay people on that, and he ran to be the governor to implement it, and I ran to be a senator to help implement it.
And that convention, it's a little claim to fame here, was held in Weber County.
Yeah, it was.
At the Golden Spike Arena.
Talk about congestion. One little lane to get into
that. To get in and out, yes.
I don't know if that's still the case.
It's still the case. Well, we have two entrances, but yes.
Yeah, it was awful. And I had my votes, I thought. You needed 70% at the time. And
so you went through the...
I knew how to count.
Right,
because I'd served in... because I'd lobbied the legislature for 14 years before that.
But the process to be elected is kind of the same, but you had to go to... Your Senate district covered two counties.
Yes.
So you had to go to the state convention to be elected.
Correct.
And you had... a finite group of delegates that you had to speak to. And at that time, the threshold was 70%.
Yeah.
So you had to get 70% of the votes to avoid a primary election. And so now I've set it up so you can tell the rest of the story.
And so my opponent, I didn't have an opponent until 5 minutes before the filing deadline.
And this is a hilarious story.
Because my opponent... had 10 years in the House. He was the stake patriarch in Highland and the first mayor of Highland after incorporation, beloved of his community, and he had filed to run for re-election as a House member. But the UEA and the UPEA both went to him and said, we will make sure you win. We'll do the work for you if you just will file. And so they were doing business that final filing day. The calendar was very different back then, but the legislature was meeting that day, and he was finally talked into it about I don't know, in the mid-afternoon.
Of the final day of filing.
And so that he went into the lieutenant governor's office to change his, and at that time, you had to file, if you're going to change your filing, you had to file at the place where you filed initially, which was Provo. So he jumped in his car, went down there, and if I had known, I would have had somebody let the air out of his tires or something.
But because his house district was solely contained in Utah County, yes. So he had to unfile there first before he could file for the Senate, and the Senate filing location was in the Capitol because it was a state. It covered two counties.
Right.
So today you can actually do it in either place.
Anywhere. Yeah.
It's one of the ways, unlike Georgia, we've made voting easier.
Filing. I was in the Capitol Rotunda when he came in from the legislative parking structure. He was just sweating, just rushing, and I saw him, and he said, "I've decided to file." And he went in 5 minutes before they closed the doors. And then at the Weber County Convention, I had contacted every single legislator or every single delegate.
I think you thought you had 71%.
I had 71%.
Right.
I had it down. You know, I know how to count, and I always have known. Ever since I was head
of the Taxpayers Association, we'd certainly hope you know how to count.
Well, but it's judging people's reactions to you and that kind of thing that you have to evaluate. It's not as easy as accounting for money.
Right.
But so we gave our speeches. Julie was in a Stevenson's for Senate t-shirt, and all five of our kids from biggest to smallest were standing up there in front while I was giving my speech. It was so sweet.
And I'm sure that there was bribery involved to get them to do that.
Yeah, they got lots of t-shirts from different campaign booths. That's the treasure of the convention.
Well, and they were handing out all kinds of things during that. That was a massive convention,
yeah,
because you had Bob Bennett's open seat. So it was Bob and Joe.
Yeah.
They were spending, you know, ghastly amounts of money.
Brent Iyer and
Richard Iyer. Yes.
And
Mike Levitt.
Yeah. It was an amazing convention.
As a little tidbit.
And Cannon had Greenwood sing.
Yeah.
Live.
Lee Greenwood back when
I'm proud to be an American.
Yeah, the lights went dark.
Yeah.
We can do a whole episode on this.
They had a whole different sound system for Lee Greenwood than for the rest of the convention.
Yes, because as I'd like to point out, I was a county commissioner at the time in Weber County, and I sang the national anthem with Scott Simpson, and our sound system didn't make us sound as good as Lee Greenwood. No. I'll just tell you that right now. And I'm sure it wasn't the lack of talent.
Not at all.
It was just the sound system.
I didn't know Scott sang it with you.
Yes. Yeah. We sang a duet of the national anthem.
Was that the Credit Union national anthem?
We didn't even know either of us were going to be that at that time. He worked for me in Weber County.
Uh-huh.
And So they're standing up there. This is going to be one of the tough challenges to keep Senator Stevenson on the same story, and we feed off each other, so it is a problem.
My opponent's nominating speech was given by the former Speaker of the House, Glenn Brown, and he said, "We simply cannot have a lobbyist serving as a legislator." And he's not leaving the Taxpayers Association.
And I've actually heard that for the past 26 years.
Yeah. And I proudly tell all my delegates that I have a tremendous conflict of interest. I advocate for lower taxes. And if that's a problem for you, you should not vote for me.
Yeah. And throw them into the briar patch, right?
And Mont Evans, an incumbent in the House at the time, gave my nominating speech and said, "It doesn't matter if he's a lobbyist, because you have all kinds of people at the legislature that makes a good mix." And he started listing through them, and then he walked over to where Glenn Brown says, "And even dairy farmers."
Which is what Glenn did for a profession.
Yeah. And it was so, he just got such joy out of saying that to him while he was looking at him.
But you didn't get 70% of the vote at that
69.5%. There were two of my delegates that had committed to me that were working on Joe Cannon's campaign, and that was a real Senate race with a capital S.
Right.
This was a little Senate race with a small S, and therefore neither of them showed up. I went over to the Coliseum and to the booth where Joe Cannon's workers were and tried to find them and couldn't. If I had found just one of them,
you would have avoided the primary.
I would have avoided the primary. The primary, I just felt I had
lost. So it's a massive, you know, from the numbers, it's a massive victory, but you still had to drive home knowing you were going to have to run a primary election,
which was in September in those days instead of an early.
Right, because we changed it. This was the year that they decided to change it because Senator Bennett and Joe Cannon beat each other up all summer, clear to September. So that was from essentially Mother's Day in May to September. They were just pounding on each other, and the powers that be in the state, the political Illuminati is what I call them, they decided to change that law so that the primary was in June, and then everybody could rally behind who the nominee was.
Yeah.
So you had, what did you go on to win that particular primary or that, yeah, that primary
by? 2-1 almost. I carried every precinct except two precincts in my opponent's neighborhood in Highland.
And that his probably his ward and his area, and he probably lost because in the other areas around him, even though they were in his stake because of bad patriarchal blessings, maybe they didn't like him, and so they voted for you.
So Julie, in every re-election, Julie has said, "Why are you fretting this? Why are you going to all these lengths and just?" So the last time I ran, I finally caught on to her advice. Just stop sweating it so much, because you know I would lose sleep. I called it the re-election diet plan, because I would lose 20 pounds just anxious, and because I couldn't afford to lose. You know, being my full-time job with the Taxpayers Association, I didn't want to come back as a lobbyist.
You felt like your credibility was on the line.
Who am I? So I just fret about it a lot. But in the very last election, we went to Dallas to a Dallas Cowboys game. We took our grandkids and we rented a house on Halloween. You know, that final week before the election,
it's
know,
maddening.
That's when you really do everything.
Yeah.
I was absentee. I just decided, thanks to her counsel, you need to enjoy life.
And
that was so memorable to be with my family in the Dallas Cowboys game and all of that. And we were on the 50-yard line. It was wonderful. Here's how stupid I was earlier. I thought that I could actually...
Well, I mean, he's at least acknowledging at one point he was stupid. Even okay, so that's good. Yeah, earlier.
Now I'm...
Exactly.
Brilliant. But I thought that I could change the state school board's attitude towards school choice. You know, vouchers and charter schools and that
you were going to Senate
and they invited me to speak at their annual convention, which is the Friday banquet at Little America before the legislature started, or at least a Friday in January after their big convention, and they invited me to be a speaker that evening at their banquet. Well, we had tickets for our family to go to Kingsbury Hall, and I had always wanted to take Julie to Chicago to see her heartthrob, Donny Osmond,
Joseph and the Amazing.
Yeah, and here he was at Kingsbury Hall. We had the tickets, and stupidly, I thought, you know, this is my chance to save education and to convince these people, if they could just hear me, and here's this chance for... That to have them as my audience, and surely they will all say, "Oh, Stevenson, you're right. Let's go for school choice."
And what choice did you make?
I missed being with my family, and
who did Julie take?
A family friend.
So everybody got to see shirtless Donny Osmond in Joseph. I bet that was dreamy. And you were over trying to you
what
thought
a mistake.
That's hilarious. Okay, I want to touch on one last story, which kind of has to do with this, and that's the first time you went to two differing meetings, a UEA meeting, and you took Julie with you, mm-hmm. a UEA meeting, and then you went to a parents for choice.
Yeah.
A meeting. And I want you to tell that story. We only have a couple of minutes remaining, okay. So tell that story.
This is the first time I was running, and she came with me to be supportive and to show that I have my wife's support to run. And these were delegates. And one time earlier in that evening, we had the UEA teacher delegates,
mm-hmm.
and later we had the school choice delegates. And when the UEA asked me my attitude towards school choice, I kind of soft-pedaled it. I didn't lie. Truly, I didn't lie. I just didn't emphasize in the same way. And when I got to the school choice people, I was swinging from the rafters, and they were hearing my message. And we got in the car and clicked seatbelts, and I could feel this cold wind coming from, you know, just this
the passenger
silence,
side of the car.
This silence from the passenger car side of the car. Back then, I actually drove. and she was just sort of looking sad. And I thought that I had finessed that so well. I was just proud of myself. And she started to cry. And she said, "I didn't know you were like that. I didn't know you would behave that way. If you can't tell your same position with the same passion to both groups, I don't want you to run, because I don't want that in my husband. I don't want you to be calculating. I just want you to be authentic." And I don't know when I have felt so ashamed in my whole life. Nothing I'd done had made me so ashamed as realizing that's not acceptable.
Yeah, that I love that story. But I'm going to tell to end this. I remember the final night of the session 2 years ago. There were rumors that you weren't going to run again, and I think I talked to you about it a couple of times during the session, and you were pretty guarded about it. But I just remember going over to the Senate floor at the end of the session. Yeah, they open the doors up. It becomes much more relaxed at the end of the
session.
Even lobbyists can come in at that point. The sergeant at arms kind of throw their hands up. And I just remember standing at the side of the Senate floor and hearing you announced that you weren't going to run again. And it kind of was one of those, for me, world stand still for a moment, because my entire time as a lobbyist, my career, you were an institution in the Utah State Senate. And I wondered how this was all going to function, because, and we'll talk about this a little bit in another episode, but there are many, many, many pieces of landmark education or landmark pieces of legislation in education and in tax policy that, but for you and your touch on it, never would have happened. And so just as an aside, I don't need to suck up to you because you're no longer a state senator, but I'll say that it was an amazing 26-year career in the state Senate, and the state of Utah is a better place because of Senator Howard Stevenson. So this ends another edition of Stokes and Folks. Thanks for listening. Make sure you go like us and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you, Connor Sorensen. Thanks, Julie, for being in studio. And we'll talk again next week.